Hello, it's Jill Burridge here, and I'm joined today by Martin Goodman, who is chair of the Abbey Theatre Trust, which also means Company of Ten.
But the Company of Ten is not a legally constituted body. It's a group of people that have acted in St Albans under the Company of Ten label for the last 80-odd years. They were the people that built the theatre, and volunteers from the Company of Ten run the theatre today.
The Company of Ten was formed...
1934, so it was different times where St Albans didn't have, had even less than it has now. There wasn't as much radio, there wasn't as much television, there weren't video games. And a group of people got together and they decided they wanted to have an acting company, so they acted, in fact, in a barn, which is no longer there, in Verulam Park. And after a while they decided, we want to build our own theatre. And I don't know how they managed to do it, but they, with passion, commitment, all sorts of things like that, and support from the council at that time that provided a piece of land, which we now rent from them at a peppercorn rent, we built through voluntary subscription from our own funds and from a small number of grants, we built the current theatre, which is a marvellous place, but it's now 48 years old and it needs looking at. We're increasingly investing in new heating, new alarm systems and so forth.
But it's much more than amateur dramatics, I was going to say.
Yes.
Not Amdram, really, is it? It's a level above that.
We like to think so, yes. The Company of Ten does 10 productions a year at the theatre, and the rest of the time it's used for outside lets, all sorts of things, dancing, music, all ranges of music. Puppetry, all sorts of things. Someone suggested belly dancing to me the other day, but I think maybe we won't draw a line there, but we'll see. It'd be interesting. We had opera last weekend. So there's loads of stuff that goes in, and it's advertised through the internet, through social media, through posters around town. But it's all done through volunteers. I think that's the important thing.
How large is the Company of Ten in itself? How many members?
We've got about... The core company has got just under 300 members currently.
Not all of them actors, though?
No, about half. No, not even that. I would say about a quarter of them are actors. But you've got loads of people involved that you don't see, creatives, people who are involved in sound, people involved in props, people involved in lighting, and an unbelievable facility in costumes, which goes back for as long as the Company of Ten has been around and is very, very impressive. Our patron, Mike Newell, who is a film director, did one of the Harry Potter films, among other things, and he's the son of one of the original Company of Ten members. I took him round a few months ago, and he said, and he hadn't been there since he was a teenager, he said, it still smells the same.
So doing 10 productions a year, that's slightly less than one a month.
Yes.
So who chooses the plays?
We have an artistic director that we call the production executive, who, with a team of other people, will select plays for the season. That goes through our executive committee, gets approved by our executive committee, which I chair. Then that is, we ask for directors to come forward competitively. What we try to do is ensure that, as far as is possible, and this isn't a science, it doesn't matter how scientific we get about it, we try to get about it, we always get it wrong, I have to say. We try to get as broad a spectrum of drama that we can. Mm. Comedies, tragedies, thrillers, whatever.
Classics and contemporary.
Exactly, and large scale, small scale. We try to get an even balance of male and female parts throughout the year. Some actors like to work on small scale stuff in the studio, which from personal experience I think is a wonderful place to be. And other people like to work on the main stage. And this is reflected in all our seasons.
So for instance, coming up later this year or early next year, what sort of mix of plays have you got that people would know about?
Well, we start the season with two classic plays in a double bill in September, the Browning version, which is a Ratingham play, and a play by Peter Schaffer, who wrote Amadeus as well, called Black Comedy, where darkness is reversed and light is reversed. So when you think it's night, it's the lights are up and vice versa. So that's a stage trick. And then later on in November, we've got Abigail's Party, which is a Mike Leigh play from the 1970s, which we did then.
But you're rerunning it now.
We're rerunning it. Different cast, I'm glad to say. And as we say, that will have characters debating the merits of Demis Roussos on stage over James Galway. Then we've got Alan Bennett's adaptation of Wind in the Willows over Christmas.
That'll be ever popular.
And that will be. That's the second time we've done that. And Christmas plays are quite difficult to do. We can't do pyrotechnics. We can't do a lot of technical stuff because of the nature of the stage and the nature of the building. We try not to do pantomimes because we can't compete with the Auburn Arena. There is no point. We don't bring on EastEnders stars to do pantos.
It's something different.
Yes. So we do we do children's plays or plays with music. And then we go into something completely modern at the beginning of next year with a play by Mike Bartlett, which was on at the Young Vic last year, which is called Bull, which is described as The Apprentice Meets The Hunger Games. It's called a black comedy about the workplace, but it's essentially about bullying in the workplace. And it's visceral. It's an exciting play to watch and discuss afterwards.
So once you've sort of decided on your mix, is the play handed to the director and do they take over from there and do all the casting and all that
Yes.
sort of thing?
What we're very good at, I think, is teamwork and project management. It doesn't matter what disagreements people have, we will deliver the play. If it's in our control, the only thing that gets out of our control is if a license is withdrawn, for example. So there's a play withdrawn last season because the license was suddenly withdrawn. It's now available again, so it'll be on next season probably.
That's in terms of copyright.
That's in terms of copyright, indeed. So we can't do it. Because suddenly, if a professional, I can't remember the precise distance, but if a professional theatre decides to do it within 15 miles or 50 miles or nationally, we can't do it. We're not allowed to touch it. It gets withdrawn. And some plays are held back, and some plays, we can do them within a year of them being on in the West End.
And so how many directors do you have in the company of 10 who
will... That's a good question. We've probably got a pool of 20, 25 directors.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. We have a programme to bring other directors on, which is through shadowing mostly of current directors. We try to bring more directors on, and that works reasonably well, I would say. But there's always room for more people, always, in all these things.
What's the sort of time frame in terms of the director gets hold of this play, then starts casting? When will it go to stage?
It's a long time. Because we've got this large asset that needs servicing, that we need to cover the costs, and it is in many ways an ageing asset, we are very aware of those costs that are looming. For example, the 2016-17 season was decided 3 or 4 months ago. Probably earlier than that, it was crystallised before it came to the executive committee. There are directors for each of these plays already. They have already or are putting together a technical team, backstage team. Most of them are casting or have already casted for the first half of the season. So let's say 5 of the plays are already cast or near to casting. Then the rehearsal schedule is quite time consuming as well. So as a standard, we have 3 rehearsals a week, Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, for 6 to 8 weeks. So people have got to commit.
Are these evening rehearsals?
These are evenings rehearsals, so after work, for many people who have been commuting in and out of London. So it's a big commitment, and if you can't do it, you shouldn't do it. But generally speaking, it works, and people will stand in. There is an incredible passion and teamwork right across the company, and people commit their time to do all kinds of things, whether it's acting or whether it's removing boilers or whatever it is. And during the summer months, because you say there are 10 productions a year, for 2 months we are dark and we do repairs. So there's a whole team of people doing repairs at the moment.
What sort of experience do your actors have to have before they get put into plays, as it were?
We require them to audition. It's quite difficult to know. I don't think we say you need to have 6 years experience or this or that. We just look at how they perform and if they need support. We also have, traditionally, although we haven't done it in the last couple of years, we've had a lot of training that we provide to members, and we've brought professional actors in over the years, including people like Toby Jones, for example, before he was famous, came and did some stuff for us. So we will do things over weekends, classes on mask or movement or voice. People do get trained in as well.
So everybody is auditioned for parts,
yes.
Are they?
We are as democratic as possible. So the director's selection process is a democratic process. The selection of actors is also a democratic process in the sense that we will go for the best people. We do not pre-cast. It's not part of our culture. It's not. We don't go and pick off people. Some organisations, even St Albans, other organisations, St Albans that do drama will say, will approach, and there's nothing wrong with this, it's just the model is different. We'll approach actors and say, I'd like you to be Hedda Gabler. You know, we wouldn't do that. I'm sure the director has ideas who would be Hedda Gabler, but generally speaking, we do not do that. If we're short of somebody, we need somebody for a part, then we'll go and hunt people down. But otherwise, we don't.
And in terms of, you mentioned costumes earlier, and I mean, that must be a huge sort of undertaking. After 80 years of experience, you've got a colossal bank of costumes.
We have indeed, and we have a group of people who are quite amazing in their knowledge of what's there. Many times they will take a garment that we've used before and they will alter it to fit a particular actor. But we can probably do most things. I cannot describe how much there is there and the variation and the colour. And it's wonderful. They can alter, they can change, they can adapt as well as use existing clothing.
Yeah. And do you have a problem now? Because, I mean, so many people commute to work into London, which means with very demanding jobs. So that means that their time to sort of devote to community interests in this local area is much more limited.
It's a function of the modern world, isn't it? So we have an age gap, which we seek to fill. We capture, entice, attract young people from a very early age through a company of teens, which goes up to 18, and then also a youth music group. So we get to the point where people either start working or they go to university, and then we may lose them. But then they'll come back again. Or other people, if they can afford to come into the area, which is clearly a challenge, we will get other people coming in as they get married or they come back into St Albans. But we have a fair number of young people joining the company. What we do not have, which is the real challenge that we have, I think, is the level of commitment from young people that would have occurred, say, in the 30s or the 40s or the 50s or the 60s even, because people today do not just have the time. And you're lucky to have a job, so you stick to it. And it's understandable. What happens is people dip in and out. There are a core of people that will dip in and out and will belong to other drama groups with different sets of rules. But the only constraint we put on people is we say, if you want to be part of production, you have to be a member of the Company of Ten, which is a minuscule amount of money. I can't remember what it is now. I think it's about £40 a year. So it's not a lot of money. I can't explain it any other way. It's part of our ethic, our ethos. That's what we're about. So you commit to doing that. And we expect people to steward. We expect people to manage. We expect people to run the bar, do lighting and everything else that happens.
So everybody has to turn their hand to everything?
Yes, including cleaning the toilets when the cleaner doesn't turn up. We only have one employee who's the manager of the theatre who works part-time. But we have shied away from having a lot of employees because we can't afford it. The business model doesn't work if you operate it as a truly commercial operation. It only works with the love and affection and the passion of the people, the volunteers. It's the only way it can work. And it's worked well. The theatre's worked well for almost 50 years. The company's worked well for over 80 years.
It's an amazing community asset, really. All run voluntarily. And I think you've got some sort of very brave ambition for the future to extend the reach, really, of what the Abbey Theatre itself does.
For years, we've spoken about expanding the theatre in different ways and opening it up. It's more important now in a way that we've got New Westminster Lodge opposite us because it makes us look fairly shabby. It's also important because we need to attract in a new generation of people. People don't see us. I don't know what they see, but they don't see the building. And we need to find ways of attracting people in. But this can only be done in a consensual way, in a democratic way, and engaging the members. So around 300 members, I've got to convince the majority of them. And that's what we're in the process of doing. So we're moving tentatively forward. We have some architects, very impressive architects, I should say, who recently won the Reba Sterling Prize for the Everyman Theatre in Liverpool. And we've also got some advisors on the fundraising side. And we're gradually moving to the stage where we will present initial ideas without any financial commitment to the Company of Ten membership.
And you're hoping to extend the reach of the theatre in terms of making it a community arts centre.
We know from the research that we've done that there's a shortage of orchestra space. There's a shortage of dance space. If you're running ballet classes, for example, then you need to have a proper floor, a sprung floor or something similar. And if you're running exams for ballet, you need to have a particular footprint, a particular size of space. There isn't anything. You go to a church hall, maybe. You make do. And there are lots of occasions like that. So we can bring other organisations in. And we know we are currently turning organisations away because we can't fit them in. The main constraint we have at the moment is that we can't run a production in both our main stage and studio at the same time because of sound issues. If we had another space for rehearsals that was or another space for acting which was away from those two spaces, it would open up all kinds of opportunities.
And another venture which could interest our listeners very much is the collaboration with Radio Verulam at the moment. I think you're doing some plays for radio.
We have a writers group which has been running, I don't know how long it's running for, maybe 20, 30 years. Fortunately, whatever they produce is ours. It belongs to the Abbey Theatre, or maybe the Company of Ten, I'm not sure which one, but one of us. And it means that what we've done is select the best of those, and we've selected six of those plays to go forward as a season of radio plays through Radio Verulam. They have been recorded, the sound effects have been checked, everything's been done, and I think it's a very exciting opportunity for us to show what we can do. And the plays are vastly different. There's a contemporary look at King Lear. There's a play called Spaghetti Junction, which is about love and life in an Italian cafe in what could possibly be St. Albans. Then there's another play, which is a kind of, it's a satire, which is set on the border between a communist state and the West, where when they put in the dividing line between East and West, it went right through the house. So it's about people going through a hole from one side to the other and sampling both sides. And it's up to the audience to decide which is best, really.
And so when do you hope that those plays will be broadcast?
I would hope sometime no later than autumn 2016. And we're still in negotiations about how that will be done. But what we will also do, once they have been broadcast on Radio Verulam, they will be available through Radio Verulam's website. We will also put them on the internet through iTunes. There's already one play up there, which is a one-man adaptation of Jekyll and Hyde, which Radio Verulam did last year as a tryout, and is also now on iTunes. So if you look for Abbey Theatre Audio on iTunes, you will see it. It's free. It's available.
Well, we'll try. And when the autumn season starts, we'll try and remember to actually alert our listeners to what's coming up. So, Martin, thank you very much indeed for joining us. And I wish the season goes well with you and with the whole company of 10.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me.